This podcast is part of the Big Heads Media Podcast Network. Go to bigheadsmedia.com for more great podcasts.
Hi, everybody. Mike the Mailman with this week's Trends and Treasure segment for the weekend of October 3rd. And this week, we're going to just go with collegiate games. No pro games this week, only collegiate. First up this week, we go to the ACC, Virginia Tech at Duke. The underdog has covered 6 out of the last 7 years, and I would think Duke would be the underdog this weekend, so we'll go with those Blue Devils. Next up, we're going to the Big 12. We have Oklahoma versus Iowa State. In the last 7 years, the over has covered 6 out of the last 7 times, so take the total to go over. So next up, we're going to go to the Southeast Conference. We have South Carolina at Florida. Take the favorite there, which would be Florida. They have covered 6 out of the last 7 years. Take Florida minus the points. And for our bonus pick, we're going to stay in the Southeast Conference. We have Auburn at Georgia. The home team has covered 14 out of the last 17 times, so go with the Georgia Bulldogs. I'm on a hot streak right now, so let's go with a bonus pick this week. So for the bonus pick, we're going to go back to the Big 12. We have Texas Tech at Kansas State. The total has gone over 6 consecutive years. So let's make it 7 in a row this year. Take the over. So that's going to wrap it up for this week's Trends to Treasure segment. As always, I'm Mike the Mailman, and don't forget, bet with your head and not with your heart. We'll see you next week on the obligatory PSU pregame show. Go get them.
Mike, gotta hope maybe this week's a little bit better. You were like the Eagles last week. You kissed your sister.
Yeah. Oh, well, that happens.
It does. Hey, you know what? 50%, not too bad. And so this week, just to run it down again, Virginia Tech at Duke. Underdog has covered 6 out of the last 7 games. And so Mike is saying take the Blue Devils, plus 10.5. Oklahoma at versus Iowa State, 6 out of the last 7 games. The over has hit. And this is Big 12 football, so that's like money in the bank. I think.
Right.
So Mike the Mailman's trends say take the over at 62.5. Fake USC at the Swamp. The favorite has won 6 out of 7 times. The Gators are favored by 17.5. Mailman says don't fear the big number.
That's right.
Go with the home team. And then finally, we've got Mike's pick to lose to Penn State in the national championship game. There's a little preview of what we're going to talk about on TV this weekend. Auburn visiting the Georgia Bulldogs. The home team has covered 14 out of the last 17 games in this matchup. So Mailman says, take them dogs, minus 6.5. So Mailman, you got an NFL pick for us here on the obligatory PSU podcast. Go ahead.
First time, he got the Arizona Cardinals at the Cincinnati Bengals. Let's make it the Arizona Cardinals at the Carolina Panthers. Let's get the right.
Yeah, game. Let's not talk about the Cincinnati Bengals for the rest of the season. What do you think, Mike? That sounds good to me.
Okay, the home team has gone 6-0 the last 6 meetings between these two teams. So it looks like the Carolina Panthers are the team, the Matt Rhule team. Carolina, let's go Panthers.
2 W's in a row for the state college product. All right, good stuff.
That'd be great. Good.
Well, this was probably the only important part where you may have wanted to actually have a pencil or paper, but grab one anyway. It's the obligatory PSU podcast.
I've wondered how President Nixon could know so little about Watergate in 1973 and know so much about college football in 1969.
This is the obligatory PSU podcast, presented by HappyValley.com. You've listened to all those other Penn State podcasts. Now, listen to another one.
And we're back. Chris Buchanani here. No Brandon Noble with us tonight, but that's okay. I like these. I like this setup, guys. I like having Mike the Mailman, who just gave us all his trends picks.
Yep, Tipper.
And we got Kevin Horn.
Yeah, that'll be great, Mike. I can't wait to put all my money on that game.
Good. How you make it on the baseball playoffs? Any good?
I don't bet on baseball very often, Mike. It's a fool.
Okay.
Hard to predict.
Looks like a lot of the unders are covering this week.
Yeah, not a lot of runs to be scored. You're right.
Yeah.
All this stuff. I don't know what you guys are talking about. It's all foreign language to me. What is not a foreign language to me, though, is ice cream. Creamery ice cream in particular. If you are listening to this on posting date, which for us is going to be October the 2nd, this is your last day to vote in the first of the Creamery's Fantasy Flavor League matchups, the Degree Bowl. One more time to get those votes in for Alumni Swirl versus Scholars Chip. And the announcement of the winner will be made on Saturday, October the 3rd. You can follow the Creamery's social channels for that at PSU Creamery on Twitter, slash PSU Creamery on Facebook, and at Penn State Creamery on Instagram. And we'll be breaking down the result of that game and previewing the next one, the Cookie Bowl. This is a good one, Mike the Mailman. I can't wait to talk to you guys about it a little bit more in the near future, where they're going to put chocolate chip cookie dough versus cookies and cream. That's a great matchup of the Creamery taking two classic ice cream flavors, taking them up to elite level, which is what they do at the Creamery, then pairing them off against each other. So creamery.psu.edu/fantasy-flavor-league is the link you want to use. Get in on that. Lots of good contests and promotions and discounts and a little bit of fun to keep you occupied until we get to Penn State football.
I'm still getting to test those, right?
Yes, Mike the Mailman. Yes, sir. Oh yeah.
Good.
Talk about that matchup, or we're gonna let it simmer.
What's that?
We're gonna talk about that matchup, or we're gonna let it simmer?
No, we're gonna let that one simmer. We're gonna do that next episode.
Okay. I have strong thoughts.
Good. Okay. Good. I'm looking forward to it. That's good. That's a good tease. Okay, so tonight, guys, I thought this was gonna be fun. We're gonna do some things leading up to the opening weekend game versus Indiana, where we break down. I don't know. Breakdown's too strong a word. That implies that we know what we're talking about. We are going to discuss different aspects of the team and the college football season, the Big Ten season. I am going to do my always well-received on this podcast deep dive roster breakdown with my old Lion 90.7 FM broadcasting buddy, Mike Levine. I was actually reminded just this week, Athletic Matt Brown, from The Athletic. He was tweeting about the 2000 Purdue game, which was the last matchup between Penn State and Drew Brees. Penn State is the only Big Ten school Drew Brees never defeated. Did you know that?
Yes, I remember you told us. Yep.
Yeah. So that was a fun game. Penn State ended up winning when they batted down a Brees Hail Mary, which we really had to work hard to put enough arm strength on it to get it into the end zone. But it was a fun game, and it was the first time in the Joe Paterno era that Penn State lined up in the shotgun formation, if you can believe it.
Wow.
The last weekend of September in the year 2000 was the first time.
How they sneak that by Joe? I'll tell you.
Well, Joe thought it was finally time for an innovation, I suppose.
That was
one of the very first games Mike and I broadcasted together on the Lions. So we're going to have Mike come on and talk about the Nittany Lions roster for 2020. But tonight, guys, what I have done is I have selected three, we'll call them storylines or narratives, whatever you want to call it, surrounding the 2020 season. I remember when we beat Michigan in 2008, first win against the Wolverines since Brandon's senior year, 1996, long time.
Wow.
That great 08 season homecoming game. And Michigan, not very good, but they had been, worse than Iowa. They had just been the bugaboo for the Nittany Lions. And the first half of the game was a little shaky. In fact, if I remember correctly, they went out to a 14-0 lead. And the drum major missed the flip before the game.
Ooh.
I mean, it was terrifying moments if you had been to many of those Penn State-Michigan losses, as I had been. And so then, in the second half, that team was just so much better than Michigan. They came back and blew the doors off them. And I remember I came out to my tailgate afterwards, and I said, I felt like in the first half of the game, those guys were playing the Michigan jerseys and mystique. And in the second half, they were actually playing the players wearing them. And my friend starts laughing at him, and he's like, only you journalism guys do this. Only you guys have to impose narrative on everything. Like, normal people don't think this way. This is just stupid journalism talk. So, stupid journalism talk tonight, guys. We're going to impose narrative on the 2020 season. So I'm going to ask you three potential storylines. I'm going to ask for your initial reactions to them. We're going to talk about them a little bit, and then we'll see if you've moved off based on what we've talked about. So I've got one specific to Penn State, one for college football, and one for you personally. So we'll start at the top. We'll talk about the Nittany Lions, Penn State in particular, and all the changes on the coaching staff. So four coaches replaced from 2019, coaching turnover for the 2020 season. Does that end up a net positive or negative for Penn State? Initial reactions, Mike the Mailman.
Well, I think in this day and age, I think coaches are used to moving around a lot. So I don't think it's going to be tough on the coaches. Now, as the players, I don't know about the players. I think it would probably be tougher on the players, but I think the coaches are sharp enough to handle helping the players adjust to the new coaches. I think they'll be all right.
So
they did make a lot of changes. Yep.
So a net positive for Penn State, the new coach.
Yes, definitely.
Kev, what do you think?
So who are the four? There's Kirk Soraka, there's Taylor Stubblefield. Who are the other two?
There's Troutwine, the offensive line coach, and John Scott, the defensive line coach.
Okay. Oh. Well, I mean, obviously it's a net positive, right? I mean, replacing Ricky Ronnie with Kirk Soraka is, no matter what the other three do, it's never going to be that negative. I'm not even like slandering Ronnie. Like, that is just an unmitigated fact. And I think based on all the interviews, it's hard to get a sense, right? We're not in the program, but I watched most of the videos yesterday from the coach media day, where basically every coach spoke to the media over Zoom, and many of them were uploaded to YouTube. I mean, Soraka, as Ricky Ronnie said in his fake Southern accent, Ricky Ronnie of Altoona said in his fake Southern accent.
Oh, you're talking Brent Pry.
Oh, Brent Pry, rather. Yeah. Brent Pry with his fake Southern accent from Altoona. He was like, oh, that Kurt, he's a real ball coach. And he is. Like, our offensive and defense, like, so James Franklin is a football coach, but he's also like a PR wizard, face of the program type guy, attention to details, et cetera. We have both an offensive coordinator and a defensive coordinator who are true, quote unquote, ball coaches, right? Like, and I think Soraka is that. From all accounts, like, so far, off to a great start with relationship with John Clifford and just getting us to where we need to be on the offensive side of the ball. Obviously, Stubblefield, one of the best wide receivers in college football history. That can't be worse than last year. you're not going to replace Coach Chaos, right, on the defensive line side of the ball.
Yeah.
Right. So of those four, the only one that may be a downgrade is defensive line with Coach Spence. But otherwise, I don't see how you have any downgrades of those four other than the defensive line. And the three that are upgrades are like extreme upgrades.
Just
at least on paper, right? I mean, it's really hard to evaluate that until you get on the field and start calling plays and seeing how guys move around the field. Because we're not in the locker room. We're not on Zoom. We're not in the Lash building to see how they're gelling with the team. But it is one of the situations where, like, it probably can't be worse than what we had, again, other than Coach Chaos. So,
and they're probably all anxious to play anyway. So I think they're really going to go full throttle, I think, because they're just so anxious to play football. I think it's going to be good.
Well, Mike, I know that you and I and Brandon, if you were here, we all love the old football saws, right? These conventional wisdom cliches that people repeat over and over, and Kevin hates them, and you know, like he does many things. And you know, they say that the best teams coach themselves, the players coach themselves.
Right.
And the one good thing about this team is I do think it looks like it will have some pretty strong senior leadership in a few key places. You got an experienced quarterback coming back. You have some running backs who have seen a lot of reps. Offensive line has played a lot of games together. We talk about that with our buddy Keith Goon Conlon, part of the greatest offensive line in Penn State history, on the obligatory PSU pregame show that's out this weekend. And so I think you make a good point, Mike, that the strong presence in the locker room probably helps with the transition. So I was thinking about this. How would I answer this? I think I'm inclined to go with you guys. I think I agree frankly, mostly for the same reason Kevin did, that upgrade from Shiraka to Ricky Ronnie is such a huge jump. It's a net positive. Now, I will say, just in general, nothing against these guys, it's just the fact that you're replacing four coaches in a situation where you would really love to see some more consistency.
Yeah.
And so just the fact that these guys did not get anything approaching a normal offseason to get to know their players, let their players get to know them, do installs, do the personal off-the-field stuff, all of that, it's all been done over Zoom. So I think just having four new faces in the coaching room, that is a way that it could potentially be a net negative. These guys maybe over the course of their coaching careers turn out to be great for Penn State, but maybe it's something of a liability in a COVID screwed up 2020 season.
There was a really great, absolutely right. My favorite quote from Media Day of what I've seen, the absolute favorite quote was some young Buck reporter asked Brent Pry, like, well, you know, what's it like being in the same coaching room as Kirk Shiraka after he did what he did to you last year in Minnesota? When he ripped apart your defense. They asked him more polite than that, but they like definitely were very nervous to ask that sort of question. But unlike James Franklin, who, if you say one word out of place in your question, he'll condescend you. Brent Pry will like take every question and in good nature. And
it's a good question. It's a fair question.
Exactly. And he goes, to be honest with you, for the first 3 weeks, I just held my head in shame every time I passed him in the hallway. but since then, I think we've gotten to be good friends, and I think we're on the same page. But for those first 3 weeks, nothing I could do but hang my head in shame and tip my ball cap to the old ball coach, Kirk. Oh my God, I like this. I like this coaching room. That's a good answer. So.
I feel like I have to say it's going to be an upgrade because I was the one, I think, probably most loudly beating the drum to upgrade the assistants last year. Was one of the things I thought was holding the program back, that James is the guy to lead the program from the top. You know, whether it's more money or just better hiring decisions or a combination of both, you've got to upgrade your assistants. And I think he did that replacing Ricky Ronnie with Kirk Shiraka. What's interesting is, you know, look, you can say all the conspiracy theories you want, that job conveniently came open for Ricky Ronnie to be able to leave Happy Valley. There was only one coach who got fired. You know, there were two who left to go to better jobs, Sean Spencer to the NFL and Jared Parker to go be an offensive coordinator. And then obviously Ricky Ronnie became a head coach. And so Matt Limegrover is the only guy who got fired. I just made a couple notes on each one of these coaches, kind of a plus and a negative for them. Even as we're looking at the whole thing, as we think going to be a negative or a net positive for the season, Kirk Shiraka, like we've all said, obviously an upgrade, but there's an entirely new offense getting installed in less than ideal conditions. So just the fact that you made a change there, even if it's an upgrade, it's the change. And the very, very weird situation where as we sit here recording on Thursday, October the 1st, it was also the first time that the team got to practice in pads, which is crazy because they play football on the 24th or possibly the 23rd, according to Indiana. I guess we'll find out one of these days. Phil Troutwine coming here from BC, again, going back to having Goon on the TV show that comes out this weekend. He and Brandon from football circles both spoke very highly of the player development of BC's offensive linemen under Troutwine. And look, at the end of the day, performance on the field has been the issue with the O-line. But so far, some hits and misses in recruiting for Troutwine. So again, maybe once he puts a product on the field and can settle in and get back to a non-coronavirus crazy environment, that's not an issue. But in the short term, it looks like he's maybe failed to connect with some of Penn State's top prospects along the O-line. Taylor Stubblefield, as Kevin said, great pedigree as a college player, entering a cursed job like the for all you millennials out there, the defense against the dark arts job of the Penn State coaching staff is wide receivers coach, We've gone from Josh Gattis, who was great, one of the best position coaches in the country, to then this revolving door of David Corley from Army, who was supposed to be a running backs coach, and then just got moved over to wide receiver because Juwan Sider, who's a great coach and an excellent recruiter, came available when Dan Mullen got hired at Florida. Then we fired Corley after a year, and as I said, Jared Parker came in from Duke, you know, didn't light the world on fire, and now he's gone to West Virginia. So, and also some questions around Stubblefield as a recruiter. And then, yeah, John Scott, love the fact that he's an SEC guy, came here from South Carolina. They've produced some really good defensive linemen down there, even when the program as a whole has struggled, but huge shoes to fill. You're just not going to get the same kind of intensity and results right out of the gate, certainly, as you did from Sean Spencer. So,
but Chris, and these coaches, they get like contracts, like Franklin has like a 4 or 5 year contract, or how does that work, or doesn't work that way?
Yeah, no, they'll have contracts just like James, and typically the assistant's employment is tied to the head coach in one way or another.
Oh, does it? Oh, okay, I got you.
I really want to lawyer you, Chris. Like Matt Leininger was not fired; he was just his contract is not.
You're right. No, you're right. You're right. I shouldn't say that. Yeah, no, you're right to correct me that. He was
perhaps
not fired.
The same way that like Graham Spanier was not fired.
He yes.
was not no longer the president and then not renewed. So
yes. He was allowed to seek other job opportunities.
Yes. So
I think important. Kevin's so happy to tell us that. That's great. Thank you, Kevin.
Mike, you're welcome. In the same way that Joe Paterno would not fire an assistant, no matter how
you're right.
they were, right? Like the fact that, and you can bleep these names out, Chris, please. The fact that like and were allowed to coach at Penn State for like 30 years each, like that is a disgrace. And James Franklin, same way, like with the loyalty stuff. And I respect that a lot. And I get it. Does it translate to more wins? It does not. Does it make him a better person? It probably does. But it's something. And I was the same way. I'm the low person at totem pole in my firm. But when I was like in charge of Alabama State, I never fired anyone. I would just like make them miserable enough to quit or convince them that they should go do something else. And James Franklin's the same way, obviously with much higher stakes and much more important matters. But
you made a call through a back channel to the Collegian and had the Collegian offer them a job. In this analogy, the Collegian is Old Dominion.
Well, no, we would never give the Collegian that sort of respect. We would call like, you know, maybe you're better with broadcast, and I'd call up like because I consider myself an alum of WKPS the Lion.
No doubt. Radio for sure.
More than one student that I would arrange to have a show on the Lion if they would just leave Onward State. I think everyone was better off for it. And I can usually arrange for that thing to happen. So.
Well, you know, usually I'm all right. Go ahead, Mike.
Because am I alum also? Because I listen to it all the time at the post office when I work there. That's sort of being an alum, isn't it?
For sure. I don't know that I technically have the power to name you an honorary alum of the Lion, Mike, geez. But I'm just going to go ahead and do it.
Work on it. Thank you. Oh, thank you very much.
Look, it's better to ask for forgiveness than permission. It's done. It's bestowed. You're an honorary alumnus of the Lion until somebody can come along and assert the authority that I wasn't able to do that. Congratulations.
As the I think I'm the treasurer. As the treasurer of the Penn State Student Radio AIG, and as the person who controls the alumni list that submitted to the alumni association, I'm like I can say you're probably already on it, but if you're not, we'll certainly put you on it, and we'll call our friend Tom Shakley so he can get like an extra dollar for your name on that one.
You guys are my two favorite best friends right now. That's great. Thanks.
Okay. Well, congratulations, Mike. I'm happy to have you among the few, the proud, the Lion 90.7 FM alumni. So, and I was just going to say that normally I'm all about all the like poetic maudlin stuff about it. Oh, you know, college football, Penn State is bigger than this, that, or the other. I hate the loyalty stuff when it comes to the assistants. Like, look, get the job done or get them out of there. is my feeling with these guys. Like, Joe earned the right to keep his moldy oldie assistants around for decades by winning, you know, hundreds of football games and multiple national championships and multiple undefeated seasons. James does some of that kind of stuff, and then I'll be fine with him giving his buddies jobs and letting them, you know, collect a paycheck from Penn State for a decade. Until then, break the bank, get the guys who can get the job done, and win the f***ing football games. That's my philosophy.
Because you remember, Chris and Kevin, when Penn State game would be on TV, and when the announcer would say, well, they're like 180 years of consistent coaching at Penn State.
Oh, my favorite thing was at the end when Galen Hall was our offensive coordinator, and Galen was like 70 years old, and Joe had head coach had recruited him to play here. It was amazing. Yeah,
that's right.
And look, Galen Hall was not one of those names that you bleeped out earlier, Chris.
It was not.
And guess what? Bleep this name out again. But the fact that was coaching at Penn State for like 30 years. Like, that guy can't coach high school football. And he ended up at like Western Michigan or whatever, like played at Norwich University or whatever.
Wow.
Like, that guy, I he might still be at Western Michigan as far as I know. Like, he coached at Penn State for like 30 years.
Hey, just so we're clear, do I have to bleep out the name of the university he works for that gives it away?
Guess the name, please.
Okay, you got it.
The university and keep in there. You know, he is still at Western Michigan.
Yes, for sure.
On his Wikipedia, he coached at Penn State. Gosh, 24 years. What? Are you kidding me? That is unique in college. And I'm glad we had that, but like, it was.
Yep. It was good at the time.
And we won a ton of football games. I mean, truly an amazing thing. But as we've said before, something that existed alone in the universe here in Happy Valley for that period of time. And when Joe left, it was gone from the universe permanently. So now, like, this is not James Franklin's home for wayward coaching buddies. This is the Penn State football program. And it's get in, get the job done, or get out. I am very ruthless when it comes to the assistant coaching staff.
Anyway, let's get going. Mike has to go bake cookies with Parmi New at 9:54. Keep going.
Second storyline for you. This is more about the college football season in general. My question for you guys is championships this year. And let's throw playoff appearances in with that. So any kind of a title, conference title, national title, playoff appearance, do they mean as much in 2020 as they do in any other year? Kevin Horn.
I have gone back and forth. But like 90% as much, I think yes at this point. Because basically, every conference is just missing like the cupcake out of conference games, right? Otherwise, they're playing. It's yet to be seen how many games are going to be forfeited or canceled, how many teams are going to lose like key players and not
I think
be able
you,
to fight the team.
You predicted Penn State's final record was going to be 6-1.
I think. That's right. You did.
Lamont Wade's quarterback. I was being obtuse as I want to, but
sure.
You?
Mike, get those cookies ready for Parma.
Okay.
I don't know. It's one of those things where, like, if Penn State's in the running, like, I think I'm going to be real into it. But in the back of my mind, there's never going to be not that feeling like, man, why couldn't we do this during a regular year?
Right.
It's always going to have an asterisk on it. But because every major conference is going to be playing at least the majority of their season, hopefully, against a full opponent, a team with a full roster, I think it's going to mean something. And it's not like baseball where like every team's getting in and playing two game series and it's fake. It's not like the bowl season where Rutgers is going to go play in a bowl because they can field a team and have a pulse. I do think the top four is going to mean something. It's not going to be 100% there, but I think it's going to be more than I thought it was going to be a month ago. So will it mean as much? The technical answer is no. Will it still be significant, especially if Penn State can get there? I think the answer is yes.
Millman, what do you got?
You know, I think these players have, and coaches have gone through so much this year. I think it's going to mean more to them to pull through this with all this, all the delays and all the cancellation and all the schedule changes. I don't see an asterisk at all. I think it's all these guys are really earning. I mean, first of all, to be patient enough to go through what all the protocols are going through. I think it's a wonderful way. When if they win a national title, I think they've really earned it. That's for definitely sure.
Well, now you've given me a little bit to think about, Mike. You know, there's one part of me that's thinking, like, probably sometime back during World War One, there was an emergency and all the players were getting sent off to fight in the war, and Pitt, like, beat Lehigh once and tied them once and now claims that as one of its, like, 15 fake national championships. So, like, I don't know how far I want to extend this logic. On the other hand, your point about all the additional stress and chaos and everything that got them to this point, maybe it does make it a little bit better. More special. I can definitely see it from the players and coaches' perspective because they're all kind of huddled together in that foxhole and have had to, in some cases, literally, you know, fight and argue for their right to be out there and participating. For you as a fan, let's say Penn State wins a Big Ten title or goes to the playoffs, or, you know, let's say your prediction comes true and we beat Georgia and we're crowned national champions. That's no different for you from any other year.
That's exactly right. I mean, I watched the Tampa Bay Lightning go crazy when they won the Stanley Cup just last week. To me, they were as ecstatic as it would have been in a regular season. To me, it's the same thing. Yep.
All right. Yeah, I can't quite get there. Here's my problem as I'm orienting this championship, Mike. And I'm not saying it wouldn't be great. And it'll be fun, and I appreciate the novelty of it. If I am orienting this year amongst all the other college football champions, and I am putting the team that wins the title this year next to the LSU team that went 15-0 last year and was one of the great college football teams of all time, and I'm matching them up with some of these great Clemson teams that have won national titles and that Nick Saban Alabama dynasty. And you're going to put them all together on a list and say the 2020 champion is exactly the same as all these other teams. Like, I'm just not buying it. It's, you know, there are games getting canceled and postponed and moved all over the place because of coronavirus. The practice situation for teams has been different. The conference participation situation for teams has been all over the map. And at the end of the day, most of these teams are only going to play 7 or 8 regular season games with all those other crazy mitigating factors. It's a great thing, and it's novel, and it's fun for the fans, and I'm glad to have it. I am not buying that this is on an equal footing with a normal, quote-unquote, national championship.
They still have to win all their games. I mean, they still have to win their games. I don't know.
It's a hard thing to do. It's a commendable accomplishment. I don't think it's the same.
Okay.
Kev?
What if Penn State wins?
I'll be thrilled. I'll be thrilled. But there will still be this little part of me that's like, I mean.
Okay.
My mic's just waiting. Listen, if you get a chance to test that theory out and throw that in my face, no one will be happier than me. Okay.
Yeah, I know. You're right.
I get a little bonus question on this one for you guys. And Mike the Mailman, I'll stick with you and then go to Kevin. If the option were on the table and you could just pick one or the other, would you have preferred that this year they shifted for a single year to an 8-team playoff model and just sort of said, hey, look, we're going to put the crystal football on the shelf for a year. This is a unique situation. We're going to do an 8-team playoff to make it, you know, more fun. It's a different season. We're not even going to try to put this year in on the list with all the others, and this is going to be the novel, like, COVID-19 cup year, but an 8-team playoff. Would you prefer that to what they've done, which is sticking with the normal system?
I like the 8-team playoff anyway.
Yeah, I know. I know you do. But let's. This is not an argument about whether we should go to 8. This is we would go to 8 for 1 year and then go back to normal.
Yep. I would go to 8. I like. Yep.
Kev, what do you think?
No. I mean, baseball is using COVID to like implement all their nonsense commissioner-based like
they have a lot of games.
Speed of play, increase play, whatever can make them more money but make the playoffs mean less type thing. I don't want college football to do that. 8 teams is stupid. It should be 6 max, but probably 4. And no, I mean if these Power 5 leagues are able to get most of their games off, it should be a full national championship. The COVID cup is like, give me a break. No. If you're going to play the whole year and risk player safety to play the whole year, like you're going to get a national championship ring if you win it all. So no cutting corners on that. Don't use this as an experimentation year so that in the future you can be like, well, you know, I don't know. 8 teams seem fine. We're not going to go back on it now. We already did it 1 year. You know, we're not going to reduce it. That would be what the league would use it for because, again, all they care about is money, and this is one way to do it. Use the emergency situation to implement all the changes they've always wanted to happen, and so let's not let that happen. But the good news is, like, the Pac-12 is basically out, Big 12 basically out. A one-loss Penn State team could sneak in at number 4, which is what we're always looking for.
Yeah, so, that's you know, it's just keep that Ohio State loss close, boys.
Yep.
I have I've helped Penn State out by picking us to lose by huge margins to Ohio State, and we'll always either win or keep it close. So I picked us to lose by like 45 points. I'm just trying to do my part. Okay, so I got a couple rapid fire ones for you guys before we get to the last one. Just yes or no answer. Kevin Horn fans at any point during the season in Beaver Stadium? Yes or no?
No.
Mike the Mailman?
No.
You know what? I'm going to be contrarian. I'm going to go yes. That decision, like you said, Kev, is not going to be revisited, just like the decision not to play this year is not going to be revisited.
Well,
I think there's somewhere at some point they figure out a little wiggle room with this.
I mean, Governor Wolf's gathering restrictions were ruled unconstitutional by a federal judge just today. The appellate court, the circuit court instituted a stay, which is to say, like, the restrictions are now still valid until that they rule on the case. I expect that they will rule in favor of the governor based on the makeup of the court and the legal analysis so far, and the fact that the only time it has been defeated is by a pretty far-right judge. I'm not saying whether I agree with those restrictions or not. Just saying that's the reality of the legal situation, which means that 250 is the number. And when you have 2 teams and a coaching staff and a cameraman, you're almost at 250 that way alone.
Sure.
So, yeah, that's true.
And I do not see the governor budging on those restrictions anytime before December at this point. So that is, I mean, just the legal situation and the political situation in Pennsylvania, I do not see that changing. Now, if the question was, do you think that there will be fans in the stands for any Penn State game this season, which would include 4 away games and the 9th Big Ten matchup championship quasi game, I think the answer is probably 60% yes. You know, we're going to be going to Nebraska, which is a red state. We're going to be going to Indiana, which is a red state. I do think that could potentially be revisited in some of the more conservative states that do not have the level of restriction that Pennsylvania does. And so I think there will be at least fans at one Penn State game this season. And I put that at about 60% likely. But in Beaver Stadium, I think that ship has sailed given our governor.
Bomber, you're probably right. Okay, next rapid fire question. By season's end, Penn State fans feel better about the offense or the defense? Mike the Mailman.
Defense.
Saucy. Kevin Horn.
Offense. Veteran quarterback. Running back. Deep running back room. Defense loses all of its key figures. Lamont Wade is starting on defense. I think offense, right? You lose Micah Parsons, you lose Yetur Gross-Matos, John Reed, et cetera. I think it's going to be an offense. They return most of their key pieces on offense.
I'm with you. I go offense. And in terms of the team itself, so not the season, but we're just talking about the team, players, position groups, whatever. What are you most looking forward to seeing out of the 2020 Nittany Lions, Kevin Horn?
That was really quick. What did you say?
So in terms of the team itself, just players, position groups, whatever, what are you most looking forward to seeing right out of the gate? What are you looking to for this team?
Quarterback maturity, I guess.
Good answer.
Third year starter under center. Second
year starter, but third year in the program, sure.
Three in the program. I mean, he was like, whatever. He had like a 2000 quarterback rating 3 years ago. Basically 3 years.
And I mean, I guess this is technically, this might even be his fourth. God, I'm going to get confused whether he's a redshirt. Yeah. This is his fourth year, I guess, but third year playing, second year starting.
Right. Well, but yeah, when he filled in for Trace 3 years ago, he was like 6 for 6 and everyone got really excited.
Right.
I think quarterback maturity though, because Penn State ran into some issues last year with Sean being a little gippy, not reacting well under pressure, but still pretty good decision maker and able to put the ball where he wanted to put it. We just couldn't catch it. So I think getting him off to a good start at Indiana, he's a very confident individual, I think, at this point, and being able to rein that in a productive way, I think, is what I'm looking for the most out of the gate, on top of like wide receivers that can actually, you know, do what wide receivers are supposed to, which is like catch a football for like positive yardage, like, and then score touchdowns with the football in their hands, which I think has been foreign to Penn State for a couple years. So that combination is what I am most anticipating going forward, because defense is going to be what it is. The offense is, I think, could be a powerhouse if all the pieces click as they have the potential to.
I've been seeing a lot of Allen Robinson and Chris Godwin highlights on Sundays. It can be done. I know, in the not too distant past, I should say, it has been done at Penn State. Mike the Mailman, what are you looking forward to? Good answer, Mike.
If I were a football coach, I would be thrown to the tight end every down.
Yeah.
I'm so excited about this year because this is supposed to be the year of the tight end. That's what I'm really looking forward to. I love a 4-yard pass, a 6-yard game every time. I'll take that every time. These long passes are 1 and 220 or whatever. I like the tight end, get 4, 5, 6 yards of down and just run with that. And I can't wait to see this tight end stuff like he did out in Minnesota. So we'll see.
Yeah, good stuff. That's a good answer too. All right, so yeah. I was thinking I had two potential candidates for what I was going to say here. I do want to talk about what we've got at the cornerback position when I do my roster breakdown with Levine I talked about. But since I think we're all kind of trending in the offensive direction this year, I think it is an offensive year for Penn State. I'm going to say I am most excited to see Penn State able to roll out a genuinely run-first offense. I think Penn State is going to be set up to run, to set up the rest of its offensive game plan this year, and that is because I think we're going to have some road graders, experienced guys who are doing a good job run blocking on the O-line, and we've got three studs in the running back room. I think all three of those guys, the Journey Brown, Noah Kane, and Devin Ford, they are all going to get snaps. They're all going to be well-liked by the fans. They're going to play well. I think it's going to be very fun to see what Kirk Cherok can do with a run-first Penn State offense. Okay, so last question for you guys as we wrap up.
And Chris, do you think...
Go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead, Mike. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm just wondering, are they gonna do the alternate running backs again this year? Like, who has a hot hand? They're gonna stay in, or how they? Do you know what they're saying about that?
Well, it's hard to say because, you know, again, how much of that was Ricky Ronnie? How much of that was James Franklin, Juwan Sider? I don't know. I do expect down the stretch, yeah, you saw Journey kind of take over the feature back role. I do think that will be the way it works.
Yeah.
Right. You know, we've seen Penn State with some loaded backfields before. Right. You know, you think back to the 94 team where we had Kajana Carter and Mike Archie, and then Stephen Pitts would come in. They found run for all those guys, but Kajana was the guy. And so I think that's the kind of the direction.
Yeah, they're right. Yep. That's true.
So, okay. Third and final for you. Your prediction, you will enjoy / care about this season and the results of the games each week less, the same, or hell, possibly even in some strange way more. Kev, what do you think?
Oh, like I said about the meaning of the national championship, less. And I say that now, 3 weeks before we play the first game. There's nothing that a little money can't make you care about something a little bit more, I think. I mean, less. We will see how it plays out. I mean, if Penn State goes out and let's give the perfect situation, right? They go out and they kill Indiana in Bloomington. They come back to Beaver Stadium on Halloween. The energy is high in the town, just based on Halloween alone, but also because the Buckeyes are coming to town, and both teams are at full strength, and Penn State goes out and beats Ohio State in Beaver Stadium in front of a fanless crowd while everyone downtown is like watching the game sort of in this, like, you know, 2 square mile area, and Penn State's 2-0 and Ohio State's 1-1 and we're like in the driver's seat. Okay. Maybe I'm going to care just as much, but looking ahead, assuming Penn State goes 1-1, I think I'm going to be like, well, I'm going to care a little bit less, but who knows? We'll see. If Penn State starts the season 2-0, my tune, I think, will change because it's just going to depend on the wind.
Sure. At that point. Mailman, what do you got?
I'm not an outcome-based person. I just like the game of football. I will enjoy it, football, because it's football. That's, you know, win, lose, or draw, it's the same.
And my feeling is, I think, if I'm being honest with myself, I will care the same in the moment, but
in
retrospect, in the bigger picture, it will bother me less. Like, Mike, I am going to be complaining about that Minnesota. You're going to hear me complain about that Minnesota loss next year for the next, I mean, easily the next decade before I even start to let it go. I can't imagine there's going to be any result this year that I'm going to be cut as deeply by as I was that one. So I think kind of the same in the moment, but less over time. But a little, only just a little bit less. All right. Well, that was it for tonight, boys. This was fun. We don't even need Noble. You know, whatever. Maybe I should just tell him to stay home and not even come to the TV show. The hell with him. We're joking, Brandon. He's probably listening to this in the car on the way up from Philly. We're kidding, of course. But what we can't do the show without is you, the listening audience. We love you. Thanks so much for all your support and the interactions on social media and everything. It's great. If you have not already, do help us out by giving us a 5-star rating wherever you consume your podcasts. If you have a chance to write a review, that's great. We appreciate that. It always makes us feel, you know, appreciated, and it warms Mike the Mailman's heart, for God's sakes. How could you turn down that opportunity? Yep. So spread the word, all that good stuff. Creamery.psu.edu, get in there, get your vote in for whichever bowl game is going on by the time you're listening to this. And we're getting closer, ever closer to Nittany Lions football in 2020, and we'll be here with you through all of it. Thanks very much. Take care of yourselves and each other. We are.
That was the Obligatory PSU Podcast, presented by HappyValley.com. Like and follow at Obligatory PSU.
Every time you hit like and subscribe, Mike the Mailman smiles.